This is the April 17 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Kurt Kimmel. He's with AgMarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. Greg Johnson is here from TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing at the Elevator, owned by FS in Champaign County. Dave Chatterton joins us too from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and from Nutrien Ag Solutions, Eric Snodgrass is here. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Let's begin with you, Eric Snodgrass. We've been talking about the weather for the growing regions in the United States since last, October, November with you. You saw some things that suggested to you that it might be an interesting and wet springtime. Were you right?
Finally. I mean, it got one thing right. It's been really wet. I mean, the Mid-South just saw a record start to their precipitation in April. It's the wettest it's been in the Ohio Valley in any April we have record for. The Mississippi River at Memphis is up 30 feet from where it was before the start of April. And now I've got a forecast where parts of Arkansas, Missouri, Kansas, really into Oklahoma, and parts of Texas like the Red River Valley might pick up another 3 to 8 inches of rain in the next 7 to 8 days anyway. So this was anticipated that certain pockets were going to be getting some pretty wet conditions into spring, and that's really going to tighten things up. And there were some early estimates that the flooding we saw at the beginning of April through the Mid-South totaled like $80 billion in economic loss. So this was huge. Now you've got folks, though, where we are here in central Illinois, where we're looking at a wet Easter weekend. We're kind of like, all right, let's get a little more moisture in the ground, and then we'll get after this with the warmer temperatures following. You've got a lot of folks in Iowa that are pretty happy about some of the moisture coming in, plus their soil temps are pretty good. And so it's kind of a mixed bag of emotions when you think about this upcoming forecast. Some folks need to go back and keep building their arc, and others are pretty excited to be recovering some soil moisture ahead of this. But I think the big thing that we look at right now is, it's mid-April, right? I mean, where we are all sitting here talking, we still have climatologically about 45% of our frost risks should still be ahead of us. In other words, our average last frost date is tomorrow. The thing to think about is I don't have a forecast right now that's bringing in cold, which means when windows do open, folks are going to go after this pretty quickly. Just, I don't know if they're going to be planting in near ideal conditions through parts of the country that are too wet. So this is it. This is the time to be thinking about the way this crop gets established. And there are some good and there's some bad. And then there's always something in the future we worry about. So we definitely need to talk about that risk as well.
Well, tell me about it. Is there anything new or newsworthy about the future? And you have been saying that it could be pretty hot and dry this summer, or at least dry.
Yeah, I mean, there's just some historical precedents, Todd. And then on top of that, we've put together a list of years that we're concerned about. So those years are 96 and 99. They're 06 and 08. They're, well, honestly, 11, 12, and 17. Now, what's interesting is outside of 11 and 12, all those other years, drought wasn't here in Illinois where we were. We had some drier conditions, but it was in the Western Corn Belt or in the Northwest Corn Belt up in the Northern Plains, especially like in years like 06. That's a good analog, I think, to this year. But concern is that most of those years had tendencies on the hotter and drier side of things. Now, we can grow a good crop in a little bit of drought. It's just when you combine it with the heat, and I think this is going to be a hotter summer. So it's interesting to say that we've got storms and we've got wet weather now, but it's spring. That's pretty climatologically consistent. We just think that there are some indicators going later into the season based off those analogs were drier. Then we just got support from the new weather forecast models from the Europeans, the models we run in the United States. And then just today, I sent this to you via text, right? We just saw that the new Climate Prediction Center report is just hammering the Western Corn Belt with dry conditions in the middle of summer. And that's now this would be the fourth forecast in a row they've done that. So that's 4 months of consistency. And to be honest, the dividing line seems to be the Mississippi River. So we look at that and just wonder, are we going to be looking at some sort of supply side shock that gets these markets really going after something? And, or is it going to be giving us a narrative that's going to be told and the market's going to listen to until it's not, right? It's one of those things too, where I've seen markets move on fear and nothing else, right? And I've never put a dime in the market, so I get to be this outside observer. But it's interesting how it is, right? And all of a sudden we just see the weather collapse and give us something favorable. and all of a sudden loses every bit that it's gained. So Todd, I hate saying that, but that's where we are. It's April 17th. And to be honest with you, we need to do this again on June 17th when we really have a strong indication of whether or not that summer heat and drought's there.
We'll schedule you to be with us about that time. Dave Chatterton, might you have a question for Eric related to the weather here or anywhere else across the planet?
Across the planet. Well, I don't think I really have a question, but I want to commend Eric for carrying the torch and doing it early and coming out with an opinion, because it is a value. It's not, we know that it can't be predicted with accuracy of 100%, but giving us something to look at and look forward to and work around. And so far to this point, I think the picture that he's painting, Todd, is one that really should get the attention of the market in terms of we're sitting on stocks levels here that are adequate, but we can't afford much of an upset really anywhere in the world. And you're in a situation right now where we've kind of, in our part of the world and in a lot of other parts of the Corn Belt, lost that kind of early mid-April planting window. We're looking at a pretty wet week next week. I've been fairly impressed with the patience of the farmer to this point in terms of planting corn in our part of the world. But when you look at the Mid-South, you've got, this acreage increase that we're talking about in corn that we need. We need those acres, and we also need a trend or something close to yield, if not above. And we're working into a situation where we're starting to compress the odds of that by a late planting date and by suboptimal planting conditions. Take, Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi, each of those states supposedly, according to the USDA, adding over 200,000 acres of corn this year, 300,000 in Illinois, and a lot of those, 2.6 million of this additional 3.5 to 4.5 million acres is coming from the Western Corn Belt. And you just heard Eric talk about, the potential for dryness in those areas. So I think it's something we need to be paying attention to in terms of how we approach marketing. And I think it's a big part of the fabric of why the grain market has, I want to say, held up or performed as well as it has relative to what we've seen since the tariff, inauguration day of Trump on the 2nd.
So let me ask you this question then. Let's play devil's advocate and say I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. So Western Corn Belt does not slide into a hot, dry summer. We still have the issues of probably mudding in a crop around the Ohio Valley, given how wet it's been and the storms that are coming. But let's say that we hit a half bushel above projected USDA trends. You look at today's prices, what do you think that could do by the time we get to August and September to those prices if we do instead get great weather? And I'm completely wrong, because I'm more than prepared to be wrong. I'm curious.
Well, he's asking that of you, Dave, but I'm going to make Greg Johnson answer that question and see what he says. So if we're at 181.5 and we plant 95.3 million acres.
Yep.
What kind of numbers do you come out with?
95.3 million acres. We harvest 91.5%. So that's 86.7 on a 181 crop. That's a 15.78 billion bushel corn crop. Demand is 15.2. So we add 600 million bushels to the carryout. Carryout's 1.4. That gets you right at 2 billion bushels. 2 billion bushel carryout is probably $4 December corn. So that's the downside. $5 is probably the upside, unless it's a major, major drought. So use those parameters, I think, $4 to $5. And we're at 460 something today. So we're in the upper half, but we've got the whole growing season ahead of us. So hopefully we can get a little bit better opportunity to get something sold a little bit better than this. But keep in mind that if we do have a good crop, we could be going down closer to $4.
You also have a question for Eric?
Yeah, I wanted to follow up, Eric, on your comment about we can grow a good crop with a subnormal moisture as long as it's not accompanied by heat. Right. I remember 2012 was hot and dry, and of course that was the – have there been any other years since where we've had hot and dry between 2012 and recent, or even before? When's the last time? Because last year we were dry, but it wasn't hot, and so we had a good crop. The year before we were a little bit below normal on moisture, but we had not heat, so we've had good crops. I'm just wondering, when's the last time we had a hot and dry year?
Yeah, I mean, so you brought up 2023, right? This was 55 days of no rain in spring, but it didn't get hot because Canada was burning and we had a layer of smoke in the atmosphere, and it was 5 degrees cooler than average because of that smoke. So then all of a sudden it starts raining late June through July, and we hit incredible yields in Illinois, and the crop just waited on us. And that's one of the amazing things about modern seed tech. All right, so when was the last time, let's say Illinois really had a problem, and you have to go pretty far back. I would tell you that if I'm thinking about the Corn Belt I remember 2021 was problematic for parts of the Western Corn Belt. 2017 was problematic for the Western Corn Belt. 2008 and 2006, the plains took on tremendous heat, but Illinois had ridge riding thunderstorms. And so we when they took it on, we got the benefit. And what happens in those years is, I hate to say it because I know not everybody listens just from Illinois, but we can carry the country. If Illinois and Iowa hit, then sometimes, unfortunately, the markets will ignore problems happening in these places where you just mentioned there's going to be acreage added. And I think that is a real possibility this year, that Illinois could ruin this good rally because we're doing okay, you know, and this everywhere I travel, by the way, people hate us. They just don't like Illinois, and I get it. But, you know, I watched a guy dig a basement in a neighborhood over Mahomet lately, 25 feet down, still wasn't in clay. And I mean, so I get it. We've got soil and spades, and that's what protects us and prevents us from seeing these major problems. But your question is good. I'll go back and look more data and send it to you and Todd on when was the last time we really got hit with real hot summer conditions. I'll tell you this, for the last 50 years, maximum temperature trend in Illinois is flat. We're not getting hotter during the day during summer here.
Kurt Kimmel, you have a question that you'd like to ask Eric?
Yeah, kind of a twofold. You mentioned before, you know, or be more confident on June 10th, yeah. Or you still dialed into that date? And secondly, to go with that, are we looking at an Omega high pressure anchor, a ridge rider, or something that kind of up and downs?
Yeah. So why June 10th, or why that week of like June 10th to June 7th? So first of all, from your perspective, every time I've seen a weather-based market rally, it almost always happens in the second to third week of June. And that's because that's when guys like me can see out there to the beginning of pollination. We either see a problem or we won't see a problem. And we'll know up to that point how much stress we've accumulated. All right, what happens in June? During the month of May into June, that 30-day stretch, mid-May to mid-June, what we're watching for is the atmosphere to lose momentum, lose its speed, give it up to somewhere else. Maybe it's the Southern Hemisphere, maybe it's the equator, but it loses its pace across the North Pacific. When it does that, we allow cold water to upwell in the Gulf of Alaska. So if I start seeing cold water on the map in the Gulf of Alaska, that's actually symptomatic that the atmosphere is not pushing warm water over to that spot, which means it slowed down. And if it slowed down, guess what it wants to do over the west? Dip. And if it dips there, it bumps up into what you mentioned, a big Omega block that's anchored somewhere between Montana and Minnesota. And if it's in Montana, there's no problem for us. We're going to get ridge riding storms. It's going to be, we're worried about wind. We'll worry about hail. If it's over Minnesota, well, that's 80, 83, 88, and 12. And so those are the ones. So it's one of those two M states. Montana would be better for us in Illinois. Minnesota is the type that ruins Iowa, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota crop. And that's what we have to worry about. But it's going to be, the symptom will show up by mid-June right along the Gulf of Alaska. And that'll tell me if we've lost momentum or not, and we're not going to get it back anytime soon. That's the thing to watch.
You started the conversation talking about a graphic that you sent to me today from NOAA. I do have a question about that. Same question I asked you in text was that this graphic centers the deepest part of dry conditions in the three-month period of July, August, September, right on Iowa. However, it is a one-inch deficit.
Yeah.
In precipitation for that three-month period, which isn't a lot.
Nope.
So the question is, why does it worry you, and does it change very much the white areas, generally speaking, which are neutral or 50-50, dry, 50-50, normal?
Yeah.
Does it change it to what kind of percentage that this is going to be above average dry?
Yeah. So whenever we look at any of these maps, I don't care who they come from, if it's from the Europeans or from the models that we run in the United States, ignore the value of the anomaly on the seasonal forecast. It's useless. What we do instead is we look for patterns. So the pattern is dry along the Mississippi and west, and that hits northern Missouri, Iowa, Minnesota. It looks as though Illinois, we're in this kind of 50-50 thing. So this comes down to, does the ridge set up in Minnesota, or is it over central Dakotas, or is it over Montana? And no one knows that. So that's that spread that you see there. probability wise, in that really driest area that's on the map, again, Missouri, Iowa, Minnesota, the risk is at 60% still. Everything points to 60% climatological risk of that going into drier and drier conditions by July, August, and September. And back to your question a moment ago, we've had drought bookend our seasons for the past 3 years. There was a spring drought, then we had the fall droughts, but we've always gotten these summer thunderstorms. It just looks like this year we have the middle season problem, and we've not had that for a while.
It seems like it's been windier this year than in the past. Am I just imagining that? And if it is windier, is there any correlation or any reason and anything that ties that to weather growing conditions in this summer?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Let me answer the second part to that first. Do we have a correlation between a windy spring and a hot and dry or a cool and wet summer? There's not a correlation. That's good to know. What's been driving the very windy spring this year, which, by the way, NOAA released a study that's found that this spring, March through mid-April, is the windiest spring in 50 years. And what's really driving that was that we did have really good snowpack in the West. We had lingering snowpack across the Canadian prairie longer, but Texas got hot early. I mean, you've seen the big dust storms coming out of Texas. It's that thermal contrast north-south that set up twice in the month or three times in the month of March and then once in the beginning of April that has just driven these incredible wind systems. So it's always about thermal contrast to drive a wind, and we've had it in spades this spring. As soon as we get to the Canadian prairie warming up, it's all going to be done, and that'll happen in June. So we could expect to see some more strong winds going forward.
Eric, thank you so much. I know you have another appointment to get to. Thank you for coming to us. I'll give the Southpaw Social here in Muhammad a big thanks, too. We appreciate you taking the time with us, and I know you'll be setting off now. Let's continue this conversation here at Southpaw Social with Kurt Kimmel. So you've been listening to Eric talk about the weather, but we need to put that into a marketing plan. We heard some of the numbers from Greg as it's related to the supply and demand tables. USDA using a 181. You asked about, I think, a half bushel better. Somebody did. I'm wondering, though, because 181 is not trend. Trend is 182 and a half, if I remember correctly, much higher than that. If we are there, or say we're at 177, how much volatility on either end of those? A lot, I suspect, but how do farmers protect themselves in front of those kinds of different outcomes?
Yeah, the ag market team, we're 100% sold on old crop corn. It's all gone, and we've already replaced 50% with some July options. We're going to add another 50% with some additional July options, call options. So we're all in. We're 100% covered on all of our cash sales, expecting some volatility to pick up in through here. We feel it's much better to buy some options anywhere from 7 to 15 cents instead of waiting till later on and buying options when they're 30, 40 cents. We're buying it here versus 50 cents higher. So we're sold out of cash grain. We're getting heavily long, some call options in through here, expecting some volatility to pick up. But if you still have cash grain, don't read between the lines here and hang on. You still got to move cash grain because a lot of guys are saying, well, I'm going to see if you're right or not. Well, that's fine, but still use some strength in here to get some cash still.
Yeah, so I was talking with the producer yesterday and thinking about the grain that they had left, maybe a production loan that they have for the coming year, which they could pay off with the old crop if they wanted. So they're gathering interest both on the grain in the bin and paying interest to the banker. That seemed like an option that wasn't particularly good, though they've hung on for a long time. So I'm wondering what you're thinking as a grain elevator operator and then somebody who helps to advise producers in these situations what they ought to do. Let's stay with old crop for the moment and grain they might have.
Okay. Our farmers are basically 80% sold, the ones I talked to. There's some that are a little bit more and some that are a lot less, but in general, we're 80% sold, I would say. And most farmers, if they're 80% sold, they feel comfortable enough that with all the uncertainty with the weather, with the good demand that we've seen export-wise, we're 200 million bushels ahead of pace from what the USDA is using for export projections. So there's a lot of possible friendly things out there. They're content to hold on. And I tell them, if you're going to hold on, you're probably going to have to wait till June or July because it's probably going to take a weather problem to get this. And it's probably not going to be a planting delay that's going to get it. It's probably going to be the hot and dry weather this summer if it happens. So we've got April and May to get through yet. So if you're going to hold on to old crop corn, just be prepared to hold on to it for another 2 months, because the rally probably, if it's going to come, isn't going to come until then.
Any different advice from you, Dave? And if not, you can move on to the supply and demand table, looking into the May World Ag supply and demand estimates and how those numbers from your perspective might tally.
Yeah, Todd. I mean, I think just to twist it just a little bit, I think, the argument or the way it's framed up, I think these two guys did a good job of that, is old crop is really not the concern right now. Most farmers have marketed a high percentage of their old crop. It may not be 100%. It may be less than 80, who knows. But at this point, we've got a market that, has a little bit of question about weather and planting pace. We have, we're in a position where if you look at the ending stocks of the exporters of corn around the world, there's four primary exporters: the U.S., Brazil, Argentina, Ukraine. That stock to use ratio figure is at a very low historical mark. And what that tells us is we can't afford to lose a lot of corn anywhere and, around the world. Right now, the safrinha crop in Brazil is developing rather well, but, it still has a ways to go. We have a lot of questions about what happens in the U.S. here when we get this crop planted. It's a scenario where we've bought ourselves a little bit of time. And I think we've seen that reflected in the price action here of late, of the trouble and the angst that we've seen in a lot of the outside markets, the equities, a lot of the other commodity markets where grains have held up relatively well. It doesn't mean that we're outright, overtly bullish by any means by the supply and demand fundamentals, but they can change very quickly. So I think that translates into when we're looking at new crop, do we have a little bit of time here to watch and see how things develop? And I think the answer to that is yes. I think we're well supported, at this particular point from a marketing perspective. Does that mean you should be doing nothing? Certainly not. It means you better have offers ready to go and do the things that are out there. One of the things that we haven't talked about that could affect markets, of course, is the geopolitical element. I'll call it the Trump effect, just for lack of a better word, and these trade deals and tariff policies. And we've taken the negative side of that. I think the market has mostly digested that to this point. Now, I don't know what the next headline is going to be, but I do know that there's a bad side and a good side to that scenario. So far, we've been taking it in the chin and had the bad side. But a week from now, a month from now, we might get that headline that a trade deal gets cut between the U.S. and China, or the U.S. and Europe, or different trading partners out there, that leads to that, renewed buying, if you will. So I think it's a very interesting marketplace, and you have to be very disciplined, know your costs. And the idea here is when we have profitability on the table, let's take a look at locking that up. Let's use some options to keep our upside open if we need to, or different things. But keep the flexibility, but pay attention and have your offers working.
It does concern me that USDA, in its Ag Forum numbers, using that 181 and a 94 million acres of corn, as opposed to a 181 and a 95.3 million acre corn crop, and also only including policies that were in place at that point, so no tariffs. There still aren't really a lot of those tariffs on things going out of the country, except from China, and a $4.20 season's average cash price for 2025-26. That's a fairly low number. It's below where we are now, and it just concerns me that USDA has that set of numbers. They knew quite a bit about the world supply at that time, except for the safrinha crop, which is apparently going to be on track with what USDA has said so far. They have not changed anything. So how do you put that into context with what producers really ought to be thinking about, and where they should? Should they be neutral? It's a normal year. Should I be neutral, leaning to the bullish side? Just a bull, a bear? I don't know how they should lean.
Well, Dave hit it on the head, I think, when he said all the uncertainty has bought us some time. So the market, the corn market especially, is hanging in there very well. And so farmers have not had to be as aggressive on their sales because, quite frankly, the market hasn't gone down. We're up for the week, we're up for the month, we're up for the year so far. Not a lot, but we really haven't lost anything, even staring at planting right around the corner. But I would remind people that while we're 80% sold on old crop corn and beans, we're farmers in general are less than 10% sold on new crop corn and beans. Those sales will have to come at some point in time. Farmers seem to be of the opinion that they can wait until June, July and hope to get that rally, and they hope they sell it higher before it goes lower. And that's, you know, there's certainly reason to believe that that's the case. But my point is, as I said before, if everything goes well, like you said, a 181 average on the 95.3 million acres, assuming all that falls into place, it probably won't. But even if we shave a little bit off, you're still looking at a 2 billion bushel carryout or something close to that. And that's $4 corn. And so don't pass up 465, 475 out of hand. I mean, you know, maybe it goes to $5. But maybe it goes to $5, and then if you don't sell enough, it goes to $4. So you have to have parameters in mind and sell. I always like to say, if you sell in the upper half of the range, you'll be farming again next year.
Yeah, as a producer, we've always got downside risks. There's no, you know, it's got to keep that in mind, and it gets kind of messed up as you go into the growing season when you start to see weather and other things kick in. So from Ag Market team, we're wanting to put everybody in the best position to take advantage of the ups and the downs. A year ago, the new crop balance sheet showed ending stocks 2.1. Now we're down to talking 1.3, so anything can happen in through here. Even to add a little fuel to the fire with the equities going down, there could be a flow of money from paper assets to hard assets. So the volatility is going to increase substantially as we move forward here.
We haven't talked much about soybeans yet. What's your view on soybeans looking into the new crop?
Well, what's China going to do here? How I can be positive corn and a little concerned about beans, but the beans, we've got less acres, and it's going to come down to weather. The Ag Market team strategy on the beans, not as aggressive on the corn, but we'd be covering some hedges here on some weakness with the idea we can reestablish at some higher levels.
Yeah, Todd, I'm going to jump back to corn just a second, and I'll do the math a little bit differently just to kind of give a holistic perspective. But let's say we get the 95 million acres, but we're increasing 2.5 million acres in the Western Corn Belt where it could be dry and in some soils that aren't the most tolerant of that. We're increasing in the Mid-South and the Delta, again, same story. And then we're increasing to a lot lesser degree or a lot smaller degree percentage-wise in the Eastern Corn Belt where we expect the weather to be good. So you take that yield from 181 to 178, 177. 177 is 2.5 bushels below where we were last year with a good yield. Well, that takes, you know, at a harvested rate of 92.5, million acres, you know, you're taking roughly 400 million, 500 million off the balance sheet right there. And you're right back to where we start this year, 1.5, 1.6, 1.4. And so that's the other side of the situation. But that, I'm not saying that happens, but
is it really the other side of the situation? What's the cash price today, by the way? What's cash price? Old crop cash price?
470, 465, 470.
Right. So instead of 420, you're 50 cents higher, right?
Yeah. But I mean, like I said, that's the other side of the situation that can, you know, where do we go with that yield and what does it become? And are we really going to build carry out year over year? I think that's the question for the market, Todd. Beans, if you look at that situation, 84 million acres, again, doesn't take much, you know, on that type of a yield scenario or that type of an acreage base, excuse me, it doesn't take a big problem. You're already pushing your carry out levels to, instead of growing year over year, to basically, you know, depending on your demand scenario, what you think of China, where you're at with exports, different things, you know, you're basically, you know, not growing carry out year over year in that situation. Doesn't mean, again, that we're overtly bullish, but a market needs a story. And in a market where yields are coming down and we're getting to a point, we all have seen this, where the compression level or the multiplication level on the risk to the downside for those yields and production produces an outsized price, you know, risk versus, hey, we're getting better and better and better and better. So I don't want to come off as wildly bullish, because I'm not. I just think it's a situation where you have to consider both sides of this fence, and you want to have your house in order in terms of how you're marketing and approaching the market.
I agree with a lot of those premises that Dave said. You know, the acres, the extra corn acres are going to come from suboptimal producing areas. But here's the thing that I've argued and argued and argued with, and I find myself standing in front of a freight train. The USDA is going to come out with 182, and I'm going to come out with 178, 179. And I say I can go up 3 bushels an acre or down 3 bushels an acre. The government cannot go up. They can only go down. And when will they go down? Not until the fall. So the traders look at that number that's printed by the government at 182 in April, May, June, July, August. And that 182 is just too big of a number. So unless it is a full-blown drought this summer, the traders look at that 182 and say, oh, 95 million acres at 182. And we all know it's going to be 179 or less. But those 3 bushels, 4 bushels don't come off until later in the growing season. And by then, we're past the pollination scare. And so then the 3 bushel reduction in yield doesn't do as much price work for us as it would if they do it right now.
We better come back and do the soybeans. What are your thoughts on that marketplace?
Well, I think that 3 bushel yield decline in, you know, November to January this year had a pretty good effect. But, you know, soybeans, again, I mean, we don't have the sizzle that we do in corn. The global situation is not nearly as tight. We just came off of a record production in South America. We're going to see them expand acres again this year. The real is getting a little stronger. But in essence, you know, China is invested in South America. The whole tariff thing, Todd, I guess I don't know what to make of it, but I know that to this point, it hasn't changed a lot of what China has done. They will shy away from U.S. beans until they need them in the fall, until South American beans are running out and our harvest comes in and those values are cheaper. Whether or not we can get a trade deal by then, I don't know. Again, I think that could break both ways. You know, whether it's reinstituting the MFP or, you know, phase one trade deal and making that those bushels up, or whether it's a new, you know, phase one B, we'll have to see. But I think you have to be more defensive on the soybeans. We're in a position right now where we're not in a profitable situation in beans. So if we get into that $10.75, $11 resistance area, I think you need to be paying a lot of attention, being pretty sharp with your numbers and be ready to be more aggressive on marketing new crop soybeans versus new crop corn.
And from you on beans?
Yeah, just similarly, I had a range of $4 to $5 on corn. I have a range of $9 to $11 on beans, and here we are around $10.50. So, I've talked to you before, Todd. I'm 40% sold on beans already, and I know it may not be profitable, but I'm not sure we're going to get many opportunities to get much better than that. So hopefully we get to this $10.75 to $11 sometime during the summer. You know, the government could mandate more biodiesel usage. You know, we could get this trade deal. So there's some government related things that could get there, but we'll probably plant a few more half million more acres to 1 million more acres of beans, assuming a normal yield. China's not happy with us, so they're going to buy as many beans as they can from South America. So for all those reasons, I want to be a little bit more aggressive on soybean sales than I do on corn.
And let's get a final word now from each of you. Kurt Kimmel, we'll start with you.
I talked to our buddy Zwicker. He said, giddy up. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, we'll check with Dan later in the year and see if that's changed. But we're going to go with giddy up today. Dave Chatterton, your final word.
Well, Kurt, I don't know what moon phase we're in, and I'm not even sure I know what giddy up means. And like I said, I don't want to just clarify, I don't want to come off as bullish. I do want to come off as optimistic. We've been through kind of a tough period here in grains and gotten beat up through most of last summer and fall. We kind of came out of that funk in the winter here a little bit, and we've been oscillating back and forth here. And so the idea is that I think we, you know, there are some things that point to an opportunity ahead, whether it's the seasonals, whether it's the weather and the combination of those two, but you have to be ready to take advantage of that. And, you know, this isn't a year where you should be looking to pad your pocket and, hey, for really strong margins. This is a year where, hey, we're not living to farm again next year, but we have to set our sights on something more modest and just be ready to act and know what those prices mean to you and where you want to be in your marketing plan.
And Greg?
I think there's two unknowns in the soybean market. Both of those are government related. That biodiesel mandate, we haven't seen anything. The other thing related to that is the Section 301 port tariffs, which could really add a cost to, you know, shipping grain out of the U.S. But on the flip side, we could get a trade deal done with China, too, as well as with some of our other trading partners. So there's so many unknowns with soybeans that are government related that it's almost impossible to outguess that until it happens. And by the time it's announced, it's almost too late to react. So that's why I like to be a little bit more aggressive on soybean sales. We're not going to make money on soybeans this year. Let's make our money in corn and then let's try to break even or lose as least as possible in the soybean pit.
The Trump administration, of course, had proposed pork tariffs earlier in the year. They have not imposed them. They brought them back for some more consideration. North Dakota State University had done some work suggesting that the pork tariffs would drop bases equally, roughly speaking, for corn, soybeans, and wheat by 40 to 60 cents a bushel. You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. Our thanks go to our panelists, including Greg Johnson, Dave Chatterton, Kurt Kimmel, and Eric Snodgrass. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.